When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle. I'm here with Laura Heck. This week and next, we're talking to a couple of relationship coaches. This week, we're talking to Nick Sotelo. I love having access to Nick's work. You might remember a while back, we did an interview with Larry Hagner from the Dad Edge Alliance, which is kind of a support group, tribe, mastermind for men, really of all shapes and sizes who are trying to become better husbands, better dads, better business people, better fitness people. Nick is a leader inside that community. That's how we met. And I just really appreciate what he brings to the table. He's a psychologist. He's an educator. Right now, he's doing most of his work around men and anger. If you are a man, or if you know a man who is angry, and by the way, if you're a man, you're angry. And if you know a man, he's angry. I'm angry. And Nick does a really good job of helping guys come to terms with that, learn how to operate within it, and learn how to use it, almost. He will talk a little bit about his perspective here. I refer my clients to him all the time. I can't recommend him highly enough. I can't recommend the Dad Edge Alliance highly enough. If you're a man who's trying to look for a way to feel less alone in the journey of marriage or parenthood, or just kind of becoming a guy in this world, check it out. We did an episode with the founder, Larry Hagner. That was in August of 2022. It was number 228. So you might want to go back and check that out. But for now, let's hear from Nick Sotelo. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Dr. Nick, what do people call you?
People that know me call me Nick. My students call me Dr. Sotelo, but most everybody calls me Nick.
Your students, you teach?
I do, yeah. I'm a university professor here in Salem, Oregon, Corbin University.
Okay, tell me about that, because I think that there's a future. Zach and I teach for the Gottman Institute, which is teaching other clinicians. I don't have to grade work. I get to just show up. And so there's a part of me that would like to teach at the collegiate level. However, I don't want to do any of the work. I just want to stand up there and share knowledge.
So you want to be a guest lecturer. That's what
there we
be.
Go. Yeah. How does that work out? Does that pay well? Can I find joy and satisfaction?
It depends on, it's a different kind of pay, but there is a strategy about being a guest lecturer at different universities, and then you can say that you had an official capacity at that university, and you're not lying.
Okay, that's true. I mean,
right.
I'm not opposed to lying. I'm okay with that.
Right.
Be like, I used to work at Harvard. If you had like the one lecture that you went
in, it was 90 minutes, but I worked there.
That's right. Yep.
Right.
Okay. What do you teach while you're there?
I teach in the Department of Clinical Mental Health Counseling. So it's a KCREP accredited program, and I'm one of the core faculty there. So
right
teaching
on.
Mental health clinicians, yeah.
Okay. You kind of do it all, though. Right, you got a lot going on, because you're teaching and you're a therapist and you're coaching. You're offering supervision. I told Laura you're part of the Dad Edge, which is this – we interviewed – if you have not gone back and listened to the interview we did a couple years ago with Larry Hagner, the Dad Edge is a men's group that Nick is a part of. And we're excited to talk to you. We have all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Can I start with my question?
Of course.
Here's my first question. Because we do have, on this podcast, we have a lot of clinicians that listen to this as well. And I noticed that you use the word coaching on your website, but you are also a clinical supervisor, which is kind of, you have to have your license in order to do that. So how do you play that dance, or what's the difference between what you would consider coaching from therapy, and how do you do that on the business side?
Yeah. So I think philosophically, there's two different things that go on between coaching and counseling. And I've written about this, just did a post recently about it, and have a podcast episode kind of dedicated to what I think the difference is.
Okay.
And, but just to quickly do what I do, people, to help people understand is, you know, picture a blank piece of paper in your mind if you can, you know, run a line down the middle of it, and we're going to call that normal, whatever normal is, right? And then you run a little nice little sine wave down the middle of the page as normal on that baseline. In my opinion, my experience, and my read of on the ethical codes, at least within mental health counseling, is that counseling comes into play when somebody drops below baseline, right? So they're normal, that where they would say things were quote unquote fine. We all know what that means, right? They've dropped below that. And how do we know that? Well, they have symptoms. They meet criteria. You know, they get a diagnosis. And you know, our goal then is to return them back to baseline, right? So we do symptom reduction, symptom abatement. Things are quote unquote normal and fine again. And then, you know, we terminate services and we move on. Where I see coaching as moving that baseline and increasing its capacity, right? So you're actually moving people beyond what they thought was normal or fine and pushing them into a new place of capacity and increasing their abilities to move beyond what that previous vision of themselves were. So, and I think ethically there's some differences, nice. Right?
I think that's helpful.
The reason that we had you on, Nick, is because Nick and I had a conversation because I've been referring a lot of my clients in his direction, primarily because they're guys who are, they're doing okay. They have their head on their shoulders. They kind of know what they're wanting, but they're just sort of stuck, and they're kind of stuck in patterns or stuck in a mindset sort of thing. And Nick does a really good job. And you, when I asked you kind of what you're good at, you very specifically said, I'm good at helping men deal with anger, which is, I think, would be the heart of my questions today. But how do you, like, is that, did I get that right? Or how would you describe that better than I just did?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that I sifted through my own experience, both personal and professional, things that I was required to do. So another part of my background is over 2 decades in youth corrections. And Oregon, always have to qualify this because states do it differently. But in Oregon, we could keep young people in our youth system till they're age 25. Right. So in terms of, you know, development, you know, you are talking about, you know, grown males, almost fully formed brains, right? It's not only, you know, 12 to 14 year olds. In some other states, they have different parameters. Anyway, so obviously I've dealt with a lot of anger issues in that part of my life. Been certified in a lot of different interventions, you know, specific to anger control or anger management. And so, and then seeing that in my professional world, and also seeing it in my personal world, whether it was me or my friends and whatnot, it's just a common thread that it's not surprising to, you know, be in contact with a male and, you know, have them struggle with anger at some point in their life. And so just figured that would be something that I would dig into and learn as much about as possible and start bringing more and more of what I think is relevant to helping men with that to the world and through the services that I provide.
When you talk about anger, what are you talking about? Like, what's your working definition of anger?
Perfect. And I think that's it's an important distinction because there's the feeling of anger, but then there's also the behavioral response to anger is what usually catches people's attention, right? And so it's our behavioral responses to our feeling states that is what gets judged as good or bad. And it's not necessarily the feeling state itself. Feelings are just feelings, right? And so it's how we respond to those feelings that catches the attraction to others. So anger, a working definition is, it's when you experience something in your environment that triggers your sense of safety. You know, this is not safe or this is unjust. Is what I would say. Anger is a feeling state that's responding to something, you know, internally, externally. It says this is not right, this is not safe, this is not just. And something has to be done right now.
I had a client who was a corrections officer, and we were talking about de-escalation. And he said, I work with de-escalation all day long as a corrections officer. And he said, I have this one trick that I use. And the question is, if he sees that somebody's escalating, in order to, he said, I want to seek to understand them. And so the question that I ask is, have I misunderstood you or disrespected you in some way? And he said, that is the fastest way to de-escalate someone is to ask them. And it just kind of, it just dawned on me when you said disrespect, because I was like, oh, that's not a word that women use very often.
Really?
I don't hear it. I hear it a lot with males. I don't hear it a lot with females. So I just wanted to point that part out. And you're kind of nodding along like, oh, does that sound familiar? Is that like something they teach you in the corrections facility or trainings?
So I think I'm always, and so I appreciated Zach's question too, you know, and on yours, Laura, I'm not saying that yours, but they teach you a lot of front end, like how to practical nuts and bolts. This is what you do. They don't do so well on the mechanism behind that. Right. And so, what I would tell my people, because I was a trainer, a longtime trainer as well, for the state of Oregon. So what I would say, hey, I'm going to give you what cost me $300,000 in terms of tuition in for free in the next, you know, 10 seconds. Right. So that statement that your friend was using, hey, have I misunderstood you or disrespected you in some way? I'm using the, you know, the hand model of the brain. You're speaking right to the amygdala. Right. That statement right there is speaking right to the emotional center of the brain, and it's helping it calm down. It's helping it, you know, return its lid. That's what it's doing there versus stop doing that. You're out of compliance. You know, that you're just going to escalate things there. Right.
So
learning how to speak to the amygdala is huge in terms of de-escalation.
When you work with men in particular with anger, because Zach and I are couples therapists, do you ever have the pleasure of working with a partnership and talking through anger and what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done, you know, my fair share of couples work through my LMFT license and whatnot. And again, I think it's, and Laura, you were touching on this, there is a fundamental difference. That's the reason why I'm a men's anger coach and not a women's anger coach, because I do believe there's a fundamental difference between the feeling states of anger between, you know, people that have more masculine energy versus feminine energy. But so part of it is some baseline education, right? And, you know, I can get lost in stories, but this one is a really relevant story. In my supervision duties at the university, I had a student that was in a clinic up in Portland, Oregon, that was providing services to young people that were transitioning from one gender to the next. And the counseling clip was of a person who had a biological born female that was transitioning into male. And they had gotten their first round of hormones, their first round of actually, you know, external testosterone. And this whole counseling clip was about this person's experience and take away empathy for what men must be going through all the time. And what the person said is like, I just felt so angry all day, almost instantly. I felt like I was just going to just rage all the time. And the person said, I had no idea that this is what it was going to mean, you know, to become male. And, and I think that, until male and female partners, you know, understand that it is biologically different to be existing in the other body, then a lot of the judgment can get attached to somebody who becomes angry, right? And it's just fundamentally different, in my opinion, in my experience, and it takes a different approach. So educating a couple can go a long ways. Like, yeah, he gets angry, and part of that is, and he needs to do something about it. It explains it. It doesn't excuse it. Right. But it isn't something that just you can just turn it off. Right. You can just be, oh, I'm going to be angry and now I'm not going to be angry. There are things that you have to learn about yourself, both psychologically and biologically. That's part of that process to resolving anger, in my experience.
All right. So let's say I'm an angry guy and I get referred to you because my wife's fed up or because I just am out of options. I got in trouble. Yeah.
At work.
And
Yep.
So I come to you and what do you do? Like, what is the Like, how do you help me? What's the first thing that you...
Yep.
And I'm an angry guy. Like, I was thinking, like, it's actually one of my... I love this scene in the first season of Ted Lasso. Did you watch Ted Lasso? Where Nate is giving the pep talk to Roy, and he's like, anger is your superpower. Like, this is the thing that makes you amazing. You just need to channel it in the right kind of way. And I feel that. I feel that. And that's probably a little bit of the work that you're trying to accomplish. But let's say I show up at your doorstep or on your, you know, computer screen or whatever. Where do we start? What do you do?
Yeah. What I do with men is we have to get really clear on what's going on and what's at risk if change doesn't happen. Mm. Because I think, and this is a male tendency too, is to kind of suppress or ignore the reality of what's going to happen if something doesn't change, right? This is why, you know, men die from heart attacks because they haven't been to the doctor in 15 years, right? And so I think that's one of the first things is let's get really clear on, number one, what's going on and what you are at risk of losing if you don't make a change, you know, in an appropriate timeline. Because oftentimes men will just ignore that. They'll deny it. And if we don't have that outlined, then they're less likely to actually take the work seriously and actually get in there and apply themselves. So for me, that's step number one.
Step number one is what happens if you don't change? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And there's legitimate things that happen if your behavior, your outward behavior of anger is expressed in an inappropriate way, right? Like harming other people. What are some of the less obvious ways? Like if you break windows with bats, I'm thinking those are all obvious, but how do you educate and help folks understand the outcome of behaviors that are less obvious, maybe more relational?
I love that question.
Yeah. So I call that the destructive angry cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have the trigger, you have the behavior that does the obvious damage, like you said, the broken windows. And then you have the promise, I'll never do it again, right? I'm going to change. This will never happen again. And so you get a little bit of action, a little bit of momentum, but then it quickly falls away because it's so easy to suppress, deny, think you're okay. Then here's the answer to your question. Then it's the guilt and shame that sets in, right? Why men are going to take this. Why can't I do this on my own? Why is this so difficult? I must be really dumb. I must be really broken. I must be, you know, beyond help. I must be beyond all these things that we start telling ourselves, right? And then the shame starts to creep in. I'm never going to be able to do this. This is never going to be able to work out. I'm not ever going to be able to keep up with what, you know, the demands are. So it's that guilt and shame that drags a man further, further and further down into that destructive cycle. But those are all things that we typically, again, ignore, suppress, deny that are at play, right? Mm. So that's what I think it is. It's that guilt and shame that just ensnares men, and it convinces them, you know, mentally that it is what it is. They're not going to get any better.
And this is why they drink too much, or why they work too much, or why they, you know,
overcompensate. You
know. Yeah.
Yeah. Zach, do you remember, I forget what the book was that Terry Real wrote, but it was on anger in men. And
something
that dawned on me, I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. And he talks about how shame is really like toxic, but not like dangerous. When shame is present, it's dangerous. And I just remember not quite understanding it until he explained what happens when shame starts to creep in. Kind of a double whammy, like you said.
Well, his
like
model too
you.
is that you can have too much or too little. Like, and maybe that's what you're describing, Nick, is that you can have too much shame, meaning I go into these really dark places and I let guilt overwhelm me, or have too little shame where I take it out on everybody and I make sure everybody else is responsible for the problems that I have in my life, you know?
Okay. So then what's step two? So, or you said what happens when folks come to see you?
Yeah. Step two then is, going back to Zach's question, is helping them really define what anger is. And so I want to level the playing field for men. Anger is not automatically a negative thing. You can use anger for good. You can use anger for positive You can use anger to take action that serves to protect people, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not, it's a net neutral feeling state. It's you know, I'll use a dashboard analogy, right? Anger is a blinking light on the dashboard that's saying, hey, something needs your attention right now, right?
Yeah.
And there's 100, you know, 1,000 different ways to respond to that. And some of them are going to be really negative and some of them are going to be really positive. But it's just a warning light, nothing more, mm-hmm. nothing less. So we establish that as what is anger. And this is where my approach will be different than what I was taught to do and what I experienced through standard anger management, anger control, is you really have to get a good understanding for how anger is present in the man's life and exactly how it has a grip on his life. And it's that axiom, you know, a problem well-defined is a problem half-solved. Mm-hmm. If you shortchange that process, then you start picking anger management tools. And this is where men say, well, none of those work. It's like, yeah, they probably don't work because we didn't, not their fault, right? That front end piece of really understanding what anger is and how it's really impacting their life specifically has been shortchanged. Mm. So I have them list out. I just had one of my more recent clients zipped through one of the first activities, which is create your top 10 list of things that really trigger your anger. And he said, well, there's really only two things. It's my wife and my son. I get it, right? But you know, every day you have a million interactions with your wife and your son, and not all 1 million of them trigger your anger. There's specific things that happen with your wife and your son that really trigger your anger. So that's what I need you to zero in on, focus it. What is it? And then we were able to, you know, specific words, you know, specific times of the day, specific situations. It was what the triggers were. But you see that example? He said, oh, it's my wife and my son. Let's move on to the next thing. Whoa. So. Mm-hmm. That's step two, is figuring out what the triggers are.
I would imagine that he was probably thinking too that you were asking what triggers your outbursts, like not necessarily your anger, but his outbursts, because those are different, right? Like the expression of anger is different than the feeling of anger. And I think people are much more familiar with the symptom, right? You know, versus the things that you're talking about, which is like, what's the origin? What's the little seed that begins to give it energy?
Right.
Oh man, I have a whole nother question. I don't want to derail too much, but I want to put this in to see if there's some thoughts you might have maybe at the tail end, because I want to get through, you know, kind of like your working model here.
Yeah.
Which is, how does neurodiversity play into anger and anger expression? That's something that I'm seeing a lot, is kind of like a disconnection in relationships. So we don't have to answer that now, but I am thinking about that.
Yep. Yeah. And so, I mean, I can speak to it because, again, I did this in corrections, right? And so I did it. And my role towards the end of my career was I was right below the superintendent. And so I took turns being in charge of the whole facility, all 250 kids and all 300 employees, you know, for weeks at a time, did this through COVID. But I was also in charge of the quote unquote three mental health units and the isolation units, right? So I had the four highest risk units in the state of Oregon at youth level corrections. And they all reported to me directly, right? And so
awesome.
And so I say that not to you know, toot my own horn, but when you talk about neurodiversity, I had neurodiversity like most people, like most clinicians probably never have seen unless they've worked in forensic settings, right? And so it's the basic building blocks are still the basic building blocks, no matter what the type of neurodiversity that it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's about educating and breaking things down into small, digestible steps, and then learning how to recognize progress and reinforcing progress at a small level. And that sounds very behavioralist. I'm not a true dyed-in-the-wool behaviorist, but it has its utility in these applications, right? So the concepts still apply. You just need to know how to break it down into digestible pieces so that you can recognize the progress and reinforce the progress and start building on it.
When you say recognize the progress, what do you mean by that?
So, silly example, but again, pulling from my corrections environment, you ask a young person something and they give you a whole string of expletives in response, right? So I would teach the staff, okay, on average, how many expletives did that person give you? I don't know, like 15. Okay, that's 15. Your goal then is to get it down to like 10. And when that kid only gives you 10 expletives, you say, hey, thanks for responding a little bit quicker than you did last time, right?
Okay.
And then you just have to work it down, right? Mm-hmm. And so hopefully, I mean, see, you're nodding heads. So hopefully that makes some sense, right? And so,
yeah. Everything that I do is within the context of a relationship. And I do talk about like behavior reinforcement. When your partner does something that you find enjoyable and you want more of it, then be sure to reward them with your words, right?
Right. Yeah.
I guess I'm kind of thinking about when I have partners that say, I don't like the way that you express your anger. It scares me and it activates me.
Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking about kind of having a partner be able to recognize and reinforce, like, you know what? I noticed that today when you came home from work, you went to the garage for 10 minutes, you came back and you were refreshed. Normally you would come in and you would be grumpy and you would take it out on me. So I'm just kind of thinking about how this can translate into couples work as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you know, my thought there is, and this working with the men, and we're talking about the rest of the, the approach, is, you know, if a yellow jacket flies into your space right now, either one of you, right, you're going to have an immediate response to that yellow jacket, because you know that it could sting you. If it stings you, it's going to hurt, and so you're going to do all kinds of things because that yellow jacket is in your environment. For a man who has a struggle with destructive anger, they're just like a yellow jacket in that person's environment, right? And just because they are going through a process to change and heal and develop and grow, doesn't automatically change the way that they have conditioned the people in their immediate relationships. They still see you as that grizzly bear or that yellow jacket. And that's what men need to understand in this process of transformation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can make change. You can be on this positive trajectory to get things resolved in terms of anger. But you also have to understand that there's another part of this equation, right? There's your kids, there's your family, there's your friends, there's your coworker. And unfortunately, you have conditioned them to see you as a threat, especially when they hear your voice start to, ramp up, intensify, or your language your frequency start to speed up, use posture. Mm-hmm. Those are things that, as you do them unconsciously, they're still going to trigger that response in your relationships. So you have to expect that, right? So prepping mentally for that is also what I do. And it's to keep them to stay the course, right? Around those things. Yeah.
That's such a good reminder. I hear a lot, like, why can't you give me the benefit of the doubt? Right. It's like, I want to give you the benefit of the doubt, but my nervous system is also picking up on some old information.
Right. And you've given me all the valid reasons to be concerned when these things happen, right? So, so coaching men through that is huge. And getting them to expect it. I just, again, actually with one of the ones that Zach sent my way, we had a debrief around this. He's like, when you told me that this is how, this person is going to respond, it was so helpful, because as I was doing this and having this conversation, that's how they responded. And I just thought, Nick told me this was going to happen. And he said, normally I just would have shut down, gotten defensive, made things worse. But I was just like, nope, here it is. Just like Nick told me it was going to, just was able to remain calm and stay the course through that conversation. So
just reminds me of a phrase that I hear in AA a lot, which is this idea of we're seeking progress, not perfection. And people have different capacities for progress, right? The man who is angry but is slowly improving is like, oh my gosh, look at all this amazing progress. And the people in his environment still have to, that has to kind of translate or move over into them. But you can't, I think, punish people for not being perfect. You can't punish yourself for not being perfect, and you can't punish your colleagues or your family or your relationships for not being perfect. So I appreciate that part of it in terms of what you're describing.
Every plate has become a family staple in my kitchen every single week, and I look forward to making a selection from one of 25 different meal options that fit a variety of needs, including time restraints for parents who need a lovely meal in under 30 minutes. So last night was Sunday family night, and I grabbed my every plate meal kit and I headed over to grandma's house so that I could cook a home cooked meal in her kitchen. It was super easy. I didn't have to think about what I was going to make for family dinner, and I didn't have to shop. So last night we had caramelized zucchini linguine with a lemony Parmesan cream sauce. It was delicious, and I was the rock star who prepared it. Every plate is not a luxury expense. In fact, every plate is America's best value meal kit. You can get a meal for $1.49 plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering code 49MTR. Subscriptions must be active to qualify and redeem $1 steaks. Get started with every plate for just $1.49 per meal plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering code 49MTR. Happy New Year, all. You have been listening to the podcast, and clearly your minds have been on your relationship. So why not get your partner on board for a virtual weekend workshop with Zach and Laura? That's me. Our next weekend workshop is on February 9th and 10th. That is a Friday evening from 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Saturday from 8 until 3 Pacific Standard Time. You're getting 9 hours of teaching, but more importantly, these are 9 hours of practicing new relationship skills with your partner. And dare I say that office time with Zach or myself would equate to over $2,000, so the value to you is $450. We're going to guide you through exercises that will strengthen your intimate connection through conversation and appreciation. You'll learn how to validate your partner's emotions and listen artfully. You'll learn how to navigate conflict while respecting one another and managing your emotions from taking over. You'll identify shared values for building a purposeful future together. All of these skills are taught by Zach and Laura with the help of 40 years of empirically validated research by Drs. John and Julie Gottman and the 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. So come join us for a super fun and enlightening weekend on February 9th and 10th. Register on our website at marriagetherapyradio.com. Early bird registration has been extended to January 16th, and seats are limited for this virtual workshop to maintain an intimate environment for all. So enter promo code WIN, that's for winter, WIN24 early, to get the early bird discount of $425 for a couple before January 16th. What are the, kind of the behavioral tactics? Because I'm thinking through this, I'm like, okay, there's a lot of psychoeducation that you're front loading folks with. And I think we're more accustomed to the behavioral changes and learning how to respond to your feelings.
Yep.
So when does that part start?
Yeah. So once we have, you know, a good understanding of triggers and being able to predict. I mean, I'm a big believer in Daniel Siegel's, if you can name it, you can tame it. And cool. So getting them to look at their daily schedule ahead of time and just asking the question, what's going to be stressful about today? You know, where am I potentially going to be stretched then? And then almost kind of DBT based diary card, just getting them to track their emotions, track when they're feeling angry. Right. So that way, because oftentimes there's a pattern that isn't in their consciousness until they start to track it down. Right. Uh-huh. And we know, you know, the evidence suggests that just tracking feelings helps, you know, improve our, you know, response. So those are some of the behavioral things. But then it's actually getting them to pick anger response tools that actually match their actual triggers in the top 10 list. And just, you know, priming them to use those. And then they come back with me and we process how it worked or whether it was effective or not, or when to make a switch. So that's a big part of matching the tools to the actual triggers that they're experiencing, and then getting them to think through their schedule and saying, where am I going to be stretched thin here based on what I know is coming?
What do you mean by matching the behavioral tool to the trigger? Yep. Like if, let's see here, a real example is I have a client that gets really angry when wife sort of takes over in parenting, kind of like, you know, like says things like, I'll handle it, I got this, or we'll, you know, like take the baby away from him when he's in the process of swaddling or whatever, because she can do it better. And just that's something that really infuriates him. What would be a match to that? I don't understand that language.
Yeah. So again, you can't just pick random tools. You have to pick tools that actually match the situation, right? And so in a situation like that, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I'll just walk away from the situation, right? How are you going to walk away from that situation, right? You have the baby, your wife is taking the baby out of your hands, and now you're really upset. Are you actually just going to walk away?
Okay. Right?
And so it's getting them to actually think through what the situation is, you know, what the anger response is typically, and then picking a better, you know, tool to use in that moment, right? And so I would imagine there's probably a lot of mental things that are happening in that moment when that baby's being taken away. So probably helping him learn about a thought stopper in that moment is probably going to be a better tool in that moment, just rather than just saying, I'll just walk away, right? And so hopefully that makes some sense around that.
Yeah. I mean, like, same thing if you get triggered in like a business situation. You can't just walk away from a business meeting. You got to stay in that board meeting. So absolutely. What are you going to do?
Okay. What are you going to do?
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Cool. I'm going to shut up now because I'm getting all my questions answered and I'm going to pass it to you, Zach. Sorry for taking over. Yeah.
Well, to me, it's all very fascinating. I love talking with Nick and kind of, I love Nick as a resource. And it's helpful to hear about and understand that it's not all and always, like going into your trauma and trying to like understand the origin story. Like, that is important work. Maybe that's the below the line work that you're talking about in terms of therapy. And then here above the line, we're just trying to help guys, or you're just trying to help guys in particular, pull it together and make better choices inside of their relationships. And I don't know. I'm really grateful to hear a little bit more about your work. As we're just about to crash out of time. So I do want to make sure that people know how to find you and what your core, I don't know, elevator speech is, or at least your parting message, so that we can make sure that folks that are interested in working on their anger know how to access you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm pretty much on all the platforms, Nick Sotelo, Dr. Nick Sotelo. I have a podcast as well. So you can pretty much find me on whatever platform fits your fancy there. And if anything that I've said here has resonated with you, you need help with anger, or you have somebody in your life that needs help with anger, just shoot me a DM on most any platform and I'll see it. If I don't see it the same day, within a day or two, I'll see it. But I do have a website particular for this. It's angerresolution.xyz. Somebody has .com and isn't doing anything with it. But so I have anger resolution.
That makes me angry.
.xyz. And you definitely can plug into, you know, my resources there. I offer pretty much my whole program is out there for free. I have a YouTube channel as well. And, you know, so it's out there. You can plug into, you know, everything that we've talked about in this interview is out there. And I have free PDF guides to go along with anything. And, you know, I just want to get this information out there in as many hands as possible so that people can start making a difference in their life, you know, around this issue, because we didn't get here, but in our conversation, but, you know, our societies can condition men to tap into anger over the other primary feeling states. And that's part of the reason why we have men that, you know, have anger issues is they have help along the way to deny and suppress those other feeling states and feel more comfortable with anger. That's part of how men get there.
Yeah. I believe it. This was a joy. I'm excited to have a reference of being able to refer folks to you.
Or you can just hop on over to Salem and and hang out.
I'm in Bend, Nick. So that's why he was saying hop on over. Yeah.
And maybe you can go be a guest lecturer in one of Nick's classes.
Absolutely.
Let's land this plane, shall we, gentlemen? Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Thank you to our guest, Nick Sotelo. It's N-I-C-K, Nick. And then Sotelo is spelled S-O-T-E-L-O. You can find him on his website, nicksotelo.com. The YouTube channel, I am so pumped to go to that and check out all of his free materials. He has his own podcast. He's doing supervision coaching, as well as has lots of free PDFs available on his website. So please check out Nick Sotelo. Thank you for being on the podcast. And thank you so much for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.